show is a part of the Quite the Thing Media Podcast Network.
Hey, everybody.
This is Kim.
And this is Cal. You're listening to Shiny Things.
Shiny, shiny.
How was your turkey day?
My turkey day was very uneventful, but very nice.
Well, that's always good.
It's kind of like bittersweet because we've lost so many people in my house. Like, when we first started, Frank and I were talking, we started out at our very first house, our very first Thanksgiving I ever did. And we had all of Frank's family and all of my family, and there was like well over 20 people there.
Wow.
And yesterday we were down to 5. So, I mean, everybody has their struggles, but even though, you know, it was quiet, but it was just nice that we still have family to celebrate with.
Right.
Some people don't even have that.
Yeah, it depends on the year. But yesterday I couldn't go to my parents' house, so and I cooked a turkey, and then her dad came over. So we did a little Thanksgiving, put up the tree and decorated it. But typically we go to my mom's house, and sometimes there's like 30 plus people there.
So that must have been kind of like a culture shock for you.
It was. And it's like we've all been so good about COVID and stuff like that. And it's just felt like we got the short end of the stick.
Things are definitely changed.
Because, you know, here we are doing all the right things. And, you know, we got punished because somebody didn't do the right thing.
Well, that's usually how it goes. I mean, that's how come there's, I don't want to get up on my soapbox, but that's why people are ending up in the hospital that are even vaccinated, because it's not 100%.
Right.
But, I mean, it's your best form of defense for sure.
So I'm going to get my booster. You got yours. So
got it today.
I got to get mine soon. I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. It didn't even hurt.
I don't remember the shot hurting. Like the next day, like I remember the arm and all that kind of stuff.
No, I know you're thinking the same thing. You know what? Once you've gone through your natural childbirth, pain is irrelevant.
Yes.
Everything to childbirth.
Because when people are like, my arm hurts. And I was like,
suck it up.
Yeah, I was like, that's all right. I'm fine.
I gave birth without drugs to a double footling breech. Beat that.
You win.
I'm tough.
You are, just like those Papian bitches you did last week.
Oh my God, they were horrible.
They were.
But they were intriguing. You know, because you know what? You didn't just hear about what they did. It started from their childhood, so there was a lot of baggage with it. And I almost felt a little sorry for them at times, but listen, anybody that hasn't listened to the episode, you missed a good one, so you might want to try to make some time to listen to the Papin sisters.
Yeah, because that was, I thought that was a really, really good episode. Today, it's kind of the same where we kind of look at this lady from childhood to the slammer.
Here. Another woman, huh?
I know. I love, well, okay. So I was like, I need like a Black Widow type. We haven't done one of those in a while. And so I went searching and I found like the cutest little old lady that I was like, she could be anybody's grandma. She's adorable. So I ended up picking Dorothy Puente. She was actually born, it's Dorothea. Dorothea Puente, born Dorothea Helen Gray. She was born January 9th, 1929 in Redlands, California. Her parents, Trudy May and Jesse James Gray, were both alcoholics. And let's just say that that didn't have the best effects for childhood. Her father would frequently threaten to commit suicide. He actually died of TB in 1937. The following year, Trudy died in a motorcycle accident, leaving the children to be sent to an orphanage.
Oh, that's sad.
So it's like, oof, yikes.
How many kids were there?
I believe it was just her and her sister. Oh, no, it says her and her siblings. Did I write down the number of kids? That's a good question. The kids were sent to an orphanage where she and her siblings were sexually abused.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So to escape the orphanage in 1945, Dorothea married a soldier that had just returned from World War II. She had two daughters with him, one in 48 and one in 46. Her husband died of heart attack in 1948. And alone and broke, she sent one of her daughters to live with a relative, and the other was placed for adoption.
Oh, wow. So basically she had her second child and her husband died that same year?
Yep.
Wow.
So she's broke at this point. So to get some money, she started forging checks. That didn't work out so well because she was arrested and she had to spend a year in jail. But she was released after 6 months for good behavior. So shortly after her release, she had a baby girl and she put that up for adoption.
So she's not the mothering kind.
No. So it's like, honey, they have a pill.
And keep your legs closed.
Right. So she married again in 52. This marriage actually lasted 14 years, but it was filled with some pretty violent fights. So she learned to grow a thick skin and thrive in a crazy environment. And eventually they divorced in 1966. But before they divorced in 1960, Dorothea was arrested in a brothel. She said she was just visiting a friend. The cops saw things a bit differently. So she served 90 days in jail. Oh, well, that's...
She was a bit of a slut.
No, I think she just...
was making her money.
Yeah, she needed to make money. And
girls got to do what a girl's got to do, I guess.
Exactly. Maybe she was just visiting a friend. Mm-hmm. I don't know. So she left jail and was picked up for vagrancy, which gave her another 90-day stint. And soon after all this jail time, she found work as a nurse's aide, and she took care of elderly and disabled people in their own homes. So this led to her actually managing boarding houses. So in 1966, she married another man. This one was 19 years younger than she was.
Oh, okay.
So, you know.
She was stacking the deck because she didn't want her husband to die of a heart attack. So she got him young.
I know, but she didn't like him young. We'll find out because she's not really this sweet elderly grandma.
Well, so far she doesn't sound at all like innocent and sweet, but...
She actually got away with a lot of crap. So she marries this younger dude. He cheated on her all of the time. They divorced after 2 years of marriage, but she had a plan. She bought a huge house and she dedicated it to home care. The house was 3 stories tall, had 16 bedrooms, and it brought Dorothy a thriving business. It is said that she provided the best care for the homeless and destitute. She would have large parties on the holidays and not only invite her normal clientele, but the social workers and others who took part in the client's care. So while everything seemed on the up and up, Dorothy did start to act some kind of bizarre. There was a man that lived in the building. He was known as Chief. She had adopted him in some ways, but he was deemed the handyman of the home. So she made him work on weird projects. One of them was she had him dig up the basement floor. She carted away all the dirt and all the junk and stuff that was down there. And then she filled the basement with concrete. Then she had him work on this garage in the backyard. She had Chief take down the garage / shed. After that, he had to dig up even more dirt so that she could pour a cement patio. So she did have, she had this big, huge cement slab right in the middle of her backyard. And soon after this, Chief disappeared without a trace, too.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Chief seemed like a nice guy. Mm. So, yeah, she does all this weird shit. She's got cement everywhere, which, you know, me being who I am, I'm like, she's burying bodies. So in 76, she married again. She picked another winner that was physically abusive, and most of those beatings were fueled by booze. Her husband was put in jail, so she spent her time in local bars looking for some male company. She liked her men old and those who received benefits from the government. This is how she perfected her crime. She would dress in snappy clothes. She would charm her victims and steal their benefit checks and cash them by forging their signature. This plan worked for a while, but then she was caught and charged with 34 counts of treasury fraud.
Wow.
And the kicker is she basically got a slap on the wrist. Like, so, didn't, yeah, no jail time or anything like that. It's like, holy shit. And then we fast forward to April of 1982. So she's been doing this for like 20 years now. So she has this house, and a woman named Ruth Monroe, who's 61, moved into the home. Just over 2 weeks later, Ruth died of a codeine and Tylenol overdose. Dorothea would tell investigators that Ruth had been depressed about her ill husband, so they deemed this death a suicide. A few weeks later, the cops come back. This time, they claim Dorothea was drugging men that she met in the bar. Yes, she was giving old dudes roofies.
Wow.
So the guy who actually turned her in, Malcolm McKenzie, he was in the Zebra Club, and he had had a few drinks with Dorothea, and they went back to his place. When they arrived, he was so dizzy, he just couldn't move. So he sat there and watched Dorothea rummage through his stuff, taking a diamond ring off his finger and a prized penny collection. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me?
All he could do was watch?
He could just watch. So he was literally roofied. He was just like, watched her go through all this crap and then steal like his most prized possessions.
Wow.
So she was arrested and charged with 3 counts of theft and sentenced to 5 years in prison this time. This is because the judge did not take any of the other charges into consideration that she had dealt with in the past. If he had, she would have gone away for much longer, and most of these people probably wouldn't have died. So since she was no stranger to being in prison, she quickly became friends with the other prisoners. She was the jailhouse narc and would tattle on other prisoners to the COs.
Yeah, you should do that when you're in prison.
Right? I said, I guess she's never heard of snitches get stitches.
Yeah. But she wasn't really old at that point in time. She was like in her late 30s, wasn't she?
Well, she was born in 29. And is 82. Okay.
She was in her later 40s, early 50s.
So, yeah, so she should know better. So they put her in protective custody. And while she was there, she received a letter that had been written by a lonely 77-year-old dude who just liked to write to prisoners. I mean, whatever floats his boat.
Yeah.
So she quickly latched on. He was Everson Gilmeth was from Oregon. She quickly responded, and they began an intimate relationship. He even picked her up after 3 years in prison. His friend.
How did they have an intimate relationship when she was in prison?
I'm guessing that they just wrote some really raunchy mail.
Like almost like sexting?
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, that's my, who knows? They may have had conjugal.
You can't do that unless you're married.
I don't know.
But
rules might have been different back then. Look, they only gave her 5 years for all that shit she did.
Yeah, where was this in the U.S.?
So she's in California. Okay. So her friend also came to pick her up, and he was the owner of the boarding house at the time. So he had taken over while she was away. So he rented her a room for $200, and she and Gilmeth started a fast relationship when we were even planning a wedding. So this guy, Gilmeth, opened a bank account and offered to rent the boarding house for $600 a month. Like, what the fuck? Are you kidding me? So they did. They had the whole house, and now she was able to run it again. So in November of 1985, she sold his truck to a handyman that helped move a box that was nailed shut, and they wanted to move it to a storage depot. She changed her mind about like halfway to the depot and told the handyman, just help me dump it, the box, in the river. So he's like, all right, that's fine.
Gee, I wonder what's in that box.
Right? So I was like, okay. And then on New Year's Day of 86, two fishermen found the box, and it was emitting a foul smell. And when they called the cops who opened it, the remains of Gilmeth were in there, but he was so decayed, they couldn't ID him. He was wearing underpants. He was wrapped in a white sheet and was bound by electrical tape. Oh. So this poor bastard, the cops are like, all right, well, it's an unsolved homicide. And they put him on this list for 3 years. So Dorothea kept living her life. At this point, she had 40 tenants. They were mostly alcoholics and drug addicts, which she chose because she would go and give them a little bit of money to go to the bar. They'd get all amped up and they'd get in trouble and they'd get arrested. They're in jail for a month. While they're in jail, she collects their money.
Wow.
So she's not dumb.
No, an evil genius.
Right. But then, like, people just started to kind of disappear. So in that year, August 19th, Betty Palmer, she was 77, was a resident who never returned from a doctor's appointment. Hey guys, I just wanted to take a moment to gush about Anchor and how easy it is to make a podcast. First off, it's free. If it's free, it's for me. And who doesn't like free stuff? They have creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. So you can do it on the run, or if you're bored at lunch, you can fidget with your editing. Anchor will also distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many other podcast streaming networks. And you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started today. Eventually, police would find that Dorothea had her ID, and she had taken her picture and put it over Betty's picture so that she could collect her benefits.
Oh my God.
And then in February of 87, Leona Carpenter was discharged from the hospital. She stayed with Dorothea for 2 weeks and was never seen again.
This lady is going like she's taking her baby steps and getting away with it. And now she's just being greedy.
Right. Because now in July, so she gave it a few months. This man, James Gallup, he's 62. He was just diagnosed with a brain tumor, and he had been in the hospital for months. So prior to him being discharged, he told the doctors that he was going to be staying with Dorothea, never seen again. So then October, Vera Martin moves in. She was never seen again. And then February 88, Bert Montoya moved in, and Dorothy took over all of his stuff. She was basically the guardianship or something like that. Mm-hmm. She, quote, told people that he disappeared because he was visiting people in Mexico.
I'm losing track of all these people that keep disappearing.
Oh, he'll come back.
Okay, well.
Not in a good way, but he'll be back. So she went on with her sketchy actions until November 7th of 88, when a social worker had placed a missing persons report to the police about Mr. Montoya, because he wasn't like these other people that just came and went. He was like, this is where I stay and I will be here until something else happens, kind of thing. So they come in and the police are searching the residence, when one of the residents that were living in there slipped a note to the cops saying that she was forcing them to lie to her, the police. 4 days later, the cops returned with an official search warrant. They wanted to search the backyard and the home. Remember, she's got that big old slab of concrete back there. So the police returned, and within days, they unearthed 7 bodies.
Oh my goodness.
All had large amounts of dalmane. It's a type of drug. And they also found later on that she had prescriptions from a bunch of the residents that she was still filling even after they were dead. So they also found that she had cashed over 60 benefit checks after their beneficiaries had died.
Oh my gosh.
So when police had enough to charge her with murder, all of these stories have one of these, only to find that she had given them the slip. During their site visit, she had packed up her shit and just left. Like, she's just like, peace, bitches. So she actually went down to LA. She got a hotel, and she didn't leave the hotel, just only to get food and things like that. And then one day she must have just been itching to get out, so she made the mistake of leaving the hotel room and taking a bus ride, where she started a conversation with a handsome, sad, lonely fella, who he was like, this is that bitch that they're looking for. But instead of calling the cops, he called CBS News.
Oh my God. He wanted his spotlight. He wanted in the spotlight for his, you know, 5 minutes of fame.
Right? So CBS sent over a crew to her hotel, right to her hotel room, where she was quickly ID'd.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm like, all right, you know what? She got sloppy.
She did get sloppy. She could have got away with all that.
Yeah. I know. She could have left the state. It was 4 days before they realized she was gone. She could have left the country. So, needless to say, she was arrested.
So how old was she when they finally nabbed her?
Oh, let's see. This was in 1990.
Oh, okay.
So she was 1929. So 70s.
Looking very early. Oh, I was going to say 60s. 29.
90 minus 30, let's say. So you're right. I'm wrong.
Okay. Well, that's still relatively young.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, but they dressed her up and she looked like this little grandma.
And that's probably what got her through all this, to do that, her looks, looking innocent and stuff.
Right. And she's a wolf in sheep's clothing and she hides it very well. So the whole case was just a public spectacle. The pretrial hearing started in April of 1990. And of course, the defense team tried to make her look like she was a victim of circumstances, stating that all of the victims had died of natural causes.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, how do you explain the people?
Were they under the cement?
Yeah, how do you explain the people they found in the cement? Poor Betty, her head was missing from her body, her hands, and her lower legs.
Snap.
So, you know, this all sounds so much like it was just natural causes, because
absolutely.
It's like, Jesus. So, you know, they wanted to do that. But then I'm like, again, how do you explain the bodies in her house? They had to like go in with x-rays over the cement slabs to identify skeletons.
Oh my God.
So finally, you know, they had gone to, on June 19th, she was sent to stand trial for 9 counts of murder. So eventually, you know how they delay everything. They, in February of 93, the trial started. The jury was sent to consider their final verdicts when they got hopelessly deadlocked. So the judge told them, take it back, think on it, just kind of review everything. Ultimately, she was found not guilty of first-degree murder for everybody. She got two counts of first-degree and one count of second-degree. And then the other six charges were dismissed.
Wow. Somebody really dropped the ball.
Right? So at this point, they weren't going to go for the death penalty. So she was given life in prison without parole. And she actually died in prison on March 27th, 2011.
Hmm. I don't know why. I mean, I think, do you think it's the fact that, well, they have the death penalty in, oh, no, they don't, in California? When did that
stop? Well, it's one of those things, too, that the death penalty, it's like, every time a new politician comes in, it's on the table, it's off the table, on the table, off the table. Yeah. It's like, you know, they got to make up their mind. And it didn't say what she died of in prison. I'm assuming natural causes.
Yeah. I think also they take it, I honestly, I think that they take it easier on elderly.
Well, that, in, you know, she has probably good health care.
Yeah. And she looked innocent. Wow, that was, she's a real grandmother of the year.
Right?
And so, yeah. She might have grandchildren out there.
She probably does.
That is bizarre. But best, yes, not to know.
Right. So that was Dorothea Puente.
Well, she was just a breath of fresh air.
Right? I love how they're like, no, she's such a good woman. Oh, okay.
Okay, then.
You guys heard about Chief and the concrete slabs that were poured.
And the poor guy that was in his underpants in the box.
Okay. Like, Jesus, lady.
Yeah. Sloppy, sloppy.
So what do you got for us next week? Do you have any teasers?
Yep. Next week we're going to do an episode called The Christmas Tree Lady.
Ooh.
And she was found in a cemetery. And she had taken her own life.
Aww.
Yeah.
Well, at least it's not a serial killer or this lady.
Yeah, that's true. And also I wanted to do it because she was very methodical about how she wanted things. And didn't want to be identified or anything. But you know what? It's almost like paying her tribute.
Right.
No. It's, you know, it has something to do basically with, you know, mental health too.
Right.
So.
Oh, and everybody's got to get out there and vote. I have not seen any responses on what my favorite Sopranos line is.
Oh, really? Did we, should we give them a teaser? And tell them what episode it's in?
I think we can throw them a line.
I think we should tell them what episode it's in. And then they can decide, they can figure out what the line is and let us know.
All right. I'll let you give up the hint.
Okay. So here's a hint for whoever's listening. Kelly's favorite line from The Sopranos is in our Stanley House October episode. So go on our Facebook when you figure it out and send us a message or something and tell us what the line is. And then we'll put you in a drawing for a shiny thing surprise.
Right. And we also have it on Instagram.
And Twitter.
But we are taking suggestions too. So we're going to fun stuff coming up here.
And then shortly, we're going to have a big reveal.
I know. So excited.
So we should probably wait until after the holidays for that.
Yeah. Give people some time to try to win these prizes.
Yes, ma'am.
And if you guys want merch, let us know. Because we have ideas. But we want to hear from you.
Big ideas, Cal.
We have huge ideas. I love them.
So we'll be, I promise, we'll be updating our website within the next month or so to be adding that merch on there. So you'll have something to actually visualize.
Right. And we could post some pics too.
Certainly.
On Facebook.
But I guess that's it for today.
It is. Hope everybody's done with their turkey comas.
Have a wonderful day.
All right. Until next time. Bye.
Don't go away. We have a special treat in store for you when I interview the author of Crazy Is as Crazy Does, The Life of a Serial Killer, John H. Mudgett. Welcome, John, to our podcast. And thank you for taking the time to be on so we can hear a little bit more about Crazy Is as Crazy Does, The Life of a Serial Killer.
Well, thanks for having me there, Kim. I appreciate it.
So how is the book doing?
It's doing all right. I mean, I've it's been out a little over 2 years. I haven't really advertised full force, but except for late.
Okay.
Views right now on Amazon, so it's doing all right.
Well, I have to say how much I liked it. I couldn't put that book down. Kelly was the same way, only I finished it way before her. And I'm not one for, I didn't think I was, for that kind of a book, like the murderer and the serial killer thing. And honestly, your book, it kind of opened all kinds of doors for me. Because now I'm actually watching scary movies.
So, that's crazy. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I loved it. So my first question, and it's like burning into my mind since I've read this book, are you planning a sequel?
Well, I didn't originally plan for a sequel. I was going to actually, I don't know how much I should give away. I was actually going to, everybody was supposed to die. But then I said, I'm going to leave it open just in case.
I think that was smart.
Yeah, I think it might have been too, because little William keeps creeping in my mind, and I keep writing little things down in the middle of the night when I wake up. I always have a notebook by my bed, and so, yeah, it might take a few more years, but it's definitely something that I've been thinking about lately.
So that's great, because I was really excited. What about, did you ever think of maybe a prequel? And dive into John's childhood and his teenage years.
Well, I mean, I kind of did it quickly. I mean, I gave you a little bit of what he was doing, but I wasn't going into more detail than the little bit that I did there. The prequel I was thinking of was starting when the kidnapping of William's mother and him with Chris. I was going to get into detail with that. Like, what did Chris do with them the 2 days he was missing before John caught up with him?
That's a fantastic idea.
You know, and that way it will give a little more in-depth to William's sickness, where his is all going to come from. Because he's not the same type of serial killer as his grandfather. He's going to be a different one.
That's cool. Well, you know what? I'm trying not to give too much of this away, because I want people to be excited about it like I was and how Kelly was. But the ending blew me away.
I've been accused of making the ending a little bit too short, but it is a short. I try to keep it a short read.
Well, it's a novella, so
King, yeah, I'm not a Stephen King novelist, but
not yet.
Not yet, right?
But you're definitely. I mean, it was fast, but it is a novella, like you said. It's a quick book. It's an easy read. But
right.
Honestly, that ending. It blew my mind. I didn't know where that was coming from. So it was definitely a surprise.
Well, that's good. That's the way I wanted it. So that's great to hear, you know, some live feedback besides a few people that I had given it to before I published it.
So, John, what inspired you to write Crazy Is As Crazy Does, The Life of a Serial Killer?
You know, it's funny you ask that. It's something that came to me like 20-something years ago. It was like 1995 after I watched Forrest Gump and how he went from one situation to the next and how, you know, he had real-life issues in there, like with Elvis and the presidents and things like that. But I was watching Sling Blade and Copycat Killer and a few other serial killer movies that came out during that time frame. And I don't know, it just hit me like, what if I had a guy who ran into real life people and how that would affect him in his way of killing? And so that's kind of where that came from. And it just, and I would tell people about this, like, you know, what if he ran into Ted Bundy? What if he ran into, you know, this guy or that guy, and people would be like, that's cool, you should write it, you should write it. But I never really, I started to write it back in the 90s, but I never really had time. I was in the military back then, and I was always moving around, and I had a family. And now that my kids grew up, and I had a little bit of time on my hands, I actually sat down and said, you know what, it's time for me, I'm going to write this. Because, I don't know, I started watching Mindhunters on Netflix and things like that, and I'm like, it's time to get it out now. You know, everybody's into serial killers again. I'm going to get it out now while it's hot.
Well, I tell you, as I read this book, I was in my head thinking, we did a podcast on that one, and we did a podcast on that one. So it was almost like it was even more, like, real.
But, right, and that's, I tried to keep it as real as I could.
It was a really good read, but I understand that you had a different name originally for the title of this novella.
Oh, yes, I did. It was called It's in the Blood. And but then I had to give homage to Forrest Gump, so that's why I changed it to Crazy Is As Crazy Does. And I also, I don't know if you noticed, but my last two chapters, one is entitled Crazy Is, and the other's entitled Crazy Does.
Cool.
So
did you?
Yeah, It's in the Blood, and then I also had Milk Cartons was the other one that I was going to name it Milk Cartons, because back in the day, they always had the missing persons on the milk cartons.
I remember that.
You remember that, yeah. Yes,
I'm aging myself. So when you changed the title, did that influence you in any different direction to change the dynamics of the book? Or did it basically just stay the same?
It basically stayed the same. Actually, what it did is it made me change my last two chapters, Crazy Is As Crazy Does, and name them that.
Okay.
So the last two chapters were named something else, but don't ask me what they were because I can't remember now. I just changed to those. And it's fitting, if you don't you agree?
I do. Actually, your book is the first book like its kind that I've ever read. I've never been one for the serial killer and murderers and stuff like that. But it all actually, right. It, you know what? It touches a different part of your brain, for sure.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. And, you know, I try to cut some gore out at the end so people could sleep at night. You know, I didn't want to get too in detail with the severed heads and things like that. You know what I mean?
Well, I just really enjoyed it. Immensely. I did notice that I've read your acknowledgments, and it really, to me, it seems like your family is an extremely important part of yourself. Is that a true statement?
Yes, very much true.
That's nice to hear. I like the fact that your mom wasn't really one to read that kind of stuff, but she was supportive.
Actually, she still has it on her table. She can't get past chapter 5, so...
Oh, push through it. You'll love it, and then you'll want more. Wait, she'll read the whole thing, and then she'll be on you like I am about writing a sequel. John, is this your very first book?
It is, actually, yes.
Well, yeah. If that's how good your first book was, I'm sure that the second and third will be even better.
Well, I hope so, but you know, the first, you can never beat the first one, you know what I'm saying? Like, how many screams are there now? The first scream is the best scream. The first Jason is the best Jason, you know what I mean?
I get it, but I just want to read more. I have to have another one.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I'm like I said, I am putting it all down for young William, and we'll see where that takes us.
Well, I can't wait.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you so much. I really enjoyed talking to you. Is there anything else you can tell us about the book before we go?
I'm not sure what would you like me to say. I mean, I appreciate that you love it so much. And, you know, I'm glad that people out there, there's a few people out there that won't get this book because you really have to be into the serial killers. I don't know if you noticed that or not. I don't mention names.
Nope. I know. That's why it was almost like a puzzle for me when I said, oh, I know who that was. We did a podcast. So it's like you have to use your imagination.
Yes, but I mean, they all are true people. Each chapter has a true person in it. And so if you're not familiar with the serial killers, you might not get this book. It's written for more of those people that are into true crime and they know exactly, you know, what I'm talking about.
Definitely.
But, I mean, even if you're a novice person and you're not into all the serial killers, you can still get something out of it because the way he meets these people and what those people do and how it affects him, you know, or how he affects them, you can see it. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
But it's better if you know who I'm talking about. You'll get it a lot more.
It probably is, but I think there's a lot more people like you and I out there than we even realize. You know, you have to have that certain kind of sense of humor and dark side.
Yeah, it definitely is a dark side, you know. If you like movies like The Seventh Psychopath and Pulp Fiction, then you'll love the book, I would think. But anyway, I don't know how I got off topic like that, but I appreciate, you know, you reaching out to me and enjoy. I'm glad you enjoyed the book as much as you did, and I hope other people will as well.
Well,
it seems like I'm getting more good stars than bad stars at this point.
Well, actually, we did our giveaways to our four people. Our last one was announced on our last podcast, and the three out of the four that we had have already read it and loved it.
Oh, awesome. All right.
The fourth one hasn't gotten it yet, so we can't count her.
Well, that's good. Let me know. I can always send you a couple more if you want to do another one.
That's so nice. So, you know what? I want to do it again when you have your next book.
Okay. All right. See, you're going to force me into doing it sooner than later.
Probably. Well, I'm trying.
I am a procrastinator,
I'm not going to lie. I am kind of trying to push you kind of hard, but I know everybody has other things that has to get done first. But we sure appreciate you coming on the show and doing a little interview with us.
Yeah, it's awesome. Thank you so much again for having me. I love it. I love your show. So.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, definitely.
Find us at patreon.com/shinythingspodcast. Follow us on Instagram at shinythingspodcast. Find us on our Facebook group page called Shiny Things Podcast. You can also find us on Twitter at ShinyThingsPod1. You can email us at ShinyThingsPodcast@gmail.com. Don't be shy. Use any of our social media to send us show ideas, some love, or share additional details we may have missed. Remember to like us and give us 5 stars on your favorite podcasting platform. Until next time, thanks for listening.